This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
From KMOX Sports, this is the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning. Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs. Now, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
Yes, indeed. And here is the chairman and CEO of Stifel, the sponsor of this very studio, joining us online to kick things off. It's Ron Kraszewski. Ron, Happy New Year. It's great to visit with you. How are things?
Happy New Year, Tom. Things are great. It's 25 was a great year. 26 is going to be better. How you been?
I've been great. First, before we do anything, how about those Indiana Hoosiers? Come on now. Unbelievable.
Yeah, come on. You know, Tom, I didn't know how I was going to start this. I was going to ask you, like, who is the number one team in the country? I got to tell you, Tom, I've got offices all over the place, but I've made it a point to go to Georgia and Alabama and Texas and Oklahoma and Michigan just to visit my offices and talk smack for the first time in my life. Like, I'm telling you.
It's amazing. I mean, you talk about leadership. Yeah. Which you are, and you lead a lot of people. You can learn a lot from Kurt Cignetti, can't you? If anything, if you could say one thing about him, he is prepared for everything that comes his way.
He's prepared. He's focused. He's a great leader. If you read about the fact that he doesn't really practice, he lets his players rest. He's a part of the mental part of the game, but he exemplifies leadership. And like I said, look. It might be January 4th, but I'm a pretty proud Hoosier, and let's just hope they can take care of business in the Peach Bowl on Friday.
Unbelievable. I cannot wait. It is going to be really exciting. I'm actually hosting the Herman Trophy that night, so I will be hustling out of the MAC to catch the second half of that contest. I did a while back book a flight to Miami, so I'm hopeful for a win so I can get to that national championship game. Ron, we have a lot of things to talk about in a short amount of time, and I appreciate the time in joining us. By the way, Ron and I are both IU alums, so thank you for giving us that opportunity to talk about the Hoosiers first and foremost. But I know you're very passionate about sports. I mean, your name is on the Blues. Your name is on the Cardinals, not to mention the Stifel Charity Classic and so many other things here in St. Louis. But one thing people might not know about you is your affiliation with the United States Ski Team and your passion for raising funds for it, your passion for the sport. Tell us about your excitement as the Winter Olympics are fast approaching.
Well, you know, Tom, thanks for bringing that up. First of all, I am a huge proponent of sports in St. Louis. As you said, the Cardinals, the Blues, the Charity Classic, we're involved in golf, a number of things. But I have to tell you, one of my real passions is skiing. Snow skiing, and years ago, we became the title sponsor. We're really the title sponsor. Think of this. The U.S. Olympic ski team, Michaela Schifrin, Lindsey Vonn, all of them, it's the Stifel U.S. ski team. We have a fundraiser where St. Louis turns out every year we raise almost $1.5 million because, you know, U.S. government does not support like other countries, our Olympic teams, and we're able to do that. But, you know, this year, from my perspective, from a business perspective, it's going to pay off. I mean, we're getting our name all over the place, and the Olympics are going to be huge in Milan, Cortina. I'm actually going to go. I'm looking forward to it. It's a phenomenal sport, and, we're investing in it, Tom.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm a newspaper guy, and I picked up the sports page in my driveway today and turned to page B8 of the sports section. Ron, the entire page is on your ski team. In fact, you see Lindsey Vonn in four different photos, and you can see very clearly on her left arm the Stifel logo, but it's all about Lindsey, really. I mean, there are other people mentioned, but it shows you what an enormous name she is in the sports history.
Lindsey is phenomenal. That we caught lightning in a bottle because remember, Lindsey retired. Lindsey could barely walk. you know, we're coming up with a documentary. It's called On the Edge, and your visitors should watch it. ESPN's going to stream it. It'll come out a couple weeks before the Olympics. And it starts with Lindsey Vonn and her story, where she couldn't walk, she couldn't play tennis, and then a doctor was able to put a small thing in her knee, and she won a World Cup. And she's going to be a real force at the Olympics at, what, 41 years old or 40 years old? It's amazing, Tom. But you know, Lindsey's one thing, but the greatest of all time is Michaela Schifrin. Michaela Schifrin's won 106 World Cups, more than any man or woman in the history of the sport, actually by a number of 20 more, and she's just 30 years old. So the sport's phenomenal. We've got ski ambassadors and alpine jumping, dual moguls, you name it. We're invested in the sport.
Schifrin has made multiple appearances here in St. Louis, hasn't she, as you've held some events to raise funds for that team?
10 straight years, she's shown up at the Stiefel fundraiser that we've had at my house, and we had it in another venue this year. She shows up. She knows people by their first name. They know her. She's been coming here, like I said, for 10 years. And what an athlete and what a skier. She plays second today. First time she's won 5 straight slaloms. Today, everyone's disappointed. She plays second by like a tenth of a second. She's tremendous.
What about
it's fun and
yeah?
Go ahead.
Oh no, she really is. I mean, it's an incredible name and all that she does. It's amazing when you think about the expectations of finishing first every time. It's like Tiger Woods in his prime, like LeBron James in his prime.
It really was. I mean, she's won like a third of the time. It's incredible. People will say that she won much more than Tiger won, more than Roger Federer in terms of a percentage when she steps into the gate. She does. But look, it's a dangerous sport. Lindsey was hurt. Michaela got hurt last year. So it not only requires skill, it requires courage. And we, you know, at Stiefel, you know, it embodies what we like to think about our organization. We like to think that our people, you know, not only are skilled, but they're dedicated and they're passionate. And that's why we do U.S. skiing. I just have to figure out how to put my name on that Indiana jersey between now and Friday. Okay,
we'll get you a meeting with Scott Dolson. I guess. I mean, they look there.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, they'll take it.
Yeah. I think. Well, if I can get it sewn on, you might see it. Okay, just don't be too. You know me, Tom. If it can be done, you know.
Yeah. I mean, look, we're hitting the portal right now. I mean, we need some players. I mean, you know, that'll help. Before we go, yeah. Ron, what about the men's team? What about the men's ski team? We talked a lot about the women.
Yeah, the men have some real personalities. River Radamus, who could medal. You've got Tommy Ford. The men are not, and maybe even historically, you'd have to go back to Bodie Miller, where before the men were as strong as the women. So everyone's talking about the women, and for good reason. The women are the best ski team in the world right now. But the men will compete. But you also have other disciplines. You have the moguls, and you have the aerials, and you have the free ski, the half-pipe free ski, where the men will dominate. And you know what's interesting? You've seen commercials about Stiefel, Tom. We're leaning into this because I think come February 6th to the 18th, the ski team is going to win more medals than any other team across a bunch of disciplines. We've been just talking alpine here, but when we talk about all these disciplines, that's where the men will dominate as well as the women in alpine.
Ron, it's great to spend time with you. We just appreciate you so much. By the way, if you want to go learn more, just go to usskiandsnowboard.org. Great website. Everything is right there. You can learn as we get ready for the Winter Olympics. And we appreciate your partnership with KMOX. You've been a big part of who we are.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to send you a ski jacket, the official ski jacket, and I want you to wear it. All right.
Now,
underneath that ski jacket, you put on an Indiana t-shirt and go Hoosiers. Let's end with that, Tom, okay?
I love it. Thank you. I appreciate
right, man.
You, man.
See you, buddy.
Have a great day. A great friend of ours, Ron Kraszewski, chairman and CEO of Stiefel. And what a special time for him as the Winter Olympics come around and the ski team poised to bring home all kinds of medals. Really exciting. By the way, the U.S. Figure Skating Championships start this week at Enterprise Center, and we had a visit recently with the president of the Sports Commission, Mark Schreiber about that. You can go back to our last show here on Sports on a Sunday Morning and learn more about what's happening this week at Enterprise Center. We have all kinds of interviews up with the members of the figure skating on the U.S. side as well. Good times and a big St. Louis connection. We're an Olympic city. I mean, we're the first city to hold the summer games in the United States, and we're forever an Olympic city, so it's always great to talk about the Olympics here on KMOX. When we come back, we are going to talk some football. There's a lot going on, and college basketball. Mizzou fans did not go to sleep on their team, I don't think. I think they realized the SEC schedule was ahead of them, and the Tigers, to their credit, turned around after getting shellacked by Illinois and beat Florida. Illinois is pretty good, too. We'll talk about the Illini when we come back. Sports on a Sunday morning from the Stiefel Sports Studio.
From the Stiefel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
Great to visit with Ron Kraszewski. Known him for a long time, and he's been a great partner here of KMOX, and we appreciate his contributions to the St. Louis sports scene, and a lot of fun for him, I'm sure, for the U.S. ski team as well. Let's talk a few things. So we did talk about Indiana because he and I both went to IU. A lot of great friends right now, just sort of like I am, just sort of floating around town. I mean, if you've seen me out running errands or something like that, wearing this IU hat, if you're watching us on YouTube, X, Facebook, I haven't even retweeted the stream, Drew. That's how out of it I am right now. I'm just sort of like in this incredible, I don't even know how to explain it, days, you know, but in a good way. I just can't believe that it happened, and it's special. I should believe that it happened, and other people should too. I think I mentioned this with Scott Jagow this morning, is that you get a little worn out, I think, if you're an IU football fan, of everybody telling you how bad you were for a long time and how Indiana University doesn't care about football, or that they didn't care about football, or that they are a basketball school. Like, yeah, okay, we got all that. Yes, Indiana's won 8 national championships in soccer as well, 5 national championships in basketball. I would counter by saying football has not been treated poorly. I think that the program was so mediocre that people just sort of looked past it. If you're a diehard like me who watched or tried to watch every single game or attend at least a game a year, I had a lot of fun with it through the years, hoping that someday they could knock off Ohio State or Michigan. That would be great. An 8-win season would be awesome. Expectations have been raised significantly. This team is here to stay, and they're going to be really good for a long, long time. And just the simple thing on Indiana is they just do everything right. They're prepared. They tackle well. They have an excellent quarterback, and they're trying to acquire another one. There are rumors that they're trying to snag Josh Hoover from TCU. That'd be a big get for them. They have an excellent running game, and their offensive line sort of runs this team. And the offensive line is a road-grading offensive line that just demolished Alabama. They did exactly to Alabama what Nick Saban used to do to other teams, run them over. And they just beat up and bullied Alabama. There was no secret to it. There was no trick play put out by Indiana. They just ran the ball right down their throat. And when they didn't run it, they threw it efficiently, and they have got 3 NFL wide receivers that they can throw to. Elijah Surratt, Omar Cooper, and Charlie Becker, I think, will all play on Sundays, and they're going to get more. So they're here to stay, and they are really a lot of fun. And I think, you know, they're classy. I love the way they carry themselves up on stage, and I hope it always stays that way. Under Kurt Cignetti's watch, it will. And, you know, when you're winning and everybody's gunning for you, I do think that right now everybody, it feels like, is on board with this team, and we appreciate you so much. I mean, there are so many people that have been texting me from our rival teams that say, you know, I'm rooting for you. I had Alabama fans say, you know what, that sucked, but I'm on board because the way they carry themselves, the way they play, is the way everybody should play. And I appreciate that, but I know there's going to come a day where they're going to be hated, because if they start to do this again, people are going to get tired of it and want to take them down. So that said, it's been fun. I will say, for the national sports media that has been backtracking a little bit after picking Alabama or trashing Indiana's soft schedule, or, you know, saying that Indiana doesn't belong at this level, or maybe just because it says Indiana, all that's forgiven and forgotten. I don't really care anymore. I mean, I think everything has been shown now. It's a great football team that has a huge task ahead of it to beat Oregon. Beating a team twice is very hard. I think the big challenge for Indiana here is that they have to get themselves back focused within a week of winning the greatest game in school history. When they beat Ohio State, that was the greatest win in school history, but they had 3.5 weeks to get ready for the Rose Bowl. They had some time to get healthy. They had some time to take off and then refocus. That is not happening now. You have to go right back into the meeting room and review film, which they're doing at this very moment, I'm sure, of Oregon. And Oregon is awfully good. So it'll be a tough, tough test. Whoever wins that Big Ten matchup, Indiana-Oregon, will be the favorite in the national championship over Miami or Ole Miss, but any of the four could win it. And that brings me to my other point, is that I think maybe this puts to bed a little bit of the crying about James Madison and Tulane being in the playoff, that they don't belong on the same field with these teams. I'm sorry, did I not see James Madison score 34 points on Oregon? How many did Texas Tech score? That's what I thought. The Big 12 champion scored zero. Do they not belong on the same field as these other teams? Does Alabama, who got destroyed and the worst loss of any of the teams in the playoffs, it was the most lopsided game, do they not belong either? So let's just, you know, the beauty of college football is right now anybody can get it done. Maybe not James Madison or Tulane could win a national championship, but they had good seasons. I know they're going to tweak the playoff system a little bit, so it's going to be harder for those teams to get in next time around. But, you know, college football is different now. It's not Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama anymore. It's everybody's got a shot in this era. And so for all the grousing about college football, maybe this is coming from a guy who just saw his team dominate and is the number one team in the country, but things are pretty good if you play it right. If you get the resources and you get the coach and you get the money and you get the right players and you have the backing, it can happen. Now, to college basketball, which is my first love, is Cardinal baseball. That people always ask, like, what's your favorite sport? Baseball, because the Cardinals were my first love. The Cardinals are our biggest partner. The Cardinals, I'm a St. Louis kid. I grew up going to Busch Stadium with my dad. But my second love, when I first started being a sports fan, was Mizzou basketball. My dad was very close with Norm Stewart. We had a great relationship with the Tigers. I love Mizzou basketball in my heart, and I always will, even if I'm a SLU broadcaster and they're my team. And even if I'm a Hoosier and an IU alum and they are my 1A, I'll always love the Tigers and I always hope that they do well. And that's why when they lost to Illinois, it was awesome for the Illini. I mean, a tremendous win for Brad Underwood and his excellent team, and justifies those of us who said they are a legit Final Four contender. But it was a very hurtful game for Mizzou, because they seem to be spinning their wheels a little bit. And what are they going to do in the SEC? I mean, how are they going to survive in this league? And then they come out last night against the Florida Gators, who, by the way, are the defending national champions. Not as good as they were last year, but still ranked 22nd in the country. And Drew Young, they beat them 76-74 last night at Mizzou Arena. The Tigers toppled the Gators. And how it went down in the end, a driving layup, a three-pointer from Pierce, Trent Pierce, made it 69-65 with over 2 minutes left. Florida pulls to within two on multiple occasions, and then a clutch three from Anthony Robinson II with 22 seconds left, and just enough free throws down the stretch helped the Tigers secure the win, 76-74. Here's Coach Dennis Gates.
And Robinson, he would have had a horrible birthday tomorrow. Horrible. Right before that bank shot, I said, nobody else is shooting that shot but you, and you need to make the play. He tried to look at me again as if I was going to change my mind, and I said, you're shooting the ball.
You're shooting the ball, and that's exactly what happened. He knocked the shot down, and the Tigers won the game. Congrats to them, 76-74. Illinois won. They beat Penn State, never easy, on the road in the Big Ten, and they did that yesterday, beating the Nittany Lions. 73-65. Other games, SEMO beat Western Illinois 73-50. Lindenwood over USI 83-80. Moorhead State won at SIUE 73-72. The Billikens are 13-1. They smashed St. Joseph's 102-79. But Josh Schertz wasn't exactly thrilled with the team's defense. We'll talk to him live next on KMOX. It's been fun already, and we're going to have some fun now with the head coach of St. Louis University. It is our Billiken Report, and it's brought to you by Royal Banks of Missouri. We say good morning to SLU coach Josh Schertz. Morning, coach.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Doing great. Boy, had some fun on New Year's Eve, I'll tell you that. That was some entertaining game as the Billikens won the game 102-79. I want to get into all that, but I want to start with this. I did not sense that you were very pleased with the defense. At halftime, you told Tamar Scher on our telecast that it stunk, and I think after the game, you rated it an F, I do believe. Yeah. Is that true?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty bad. I mean, you know, it was one of those deals where, you know, we've gotten away a little bit from our identity there. I thought we did a poor job in all the, you know, things we do defensively, and on a night where you, you know, you make 19 threes and play as well as we did offensively, I think, you know, most efficient offensive game in at least the KenPom era, you know, so last, whatever, 28, 29 years, you should have a bigger margin than that. So I thought our defense wasn't up to snuff, and that's kind of, you know, second game in a row. We've been one of the better defensive teams in the country. You look at, you know, the metrics, you look at where we were, I think, New Hampshire, and St. Joseph's, and I kind of threw out the Principia game, but those two, you know, we've taken a step back, but it's, I mean, you know, if you look at our metrics throughout the year, we've been one of the better defenses in the country. It's why we're, I think today, you know, we're second in the country in scoring margin, you know, in Division I behind Michigan, and, you know, it's about being elite on both ends of the floor. I thought we were elite offensively and really porous defensively New Year's Eve.
Yeah, you know, St. Joseph's has some size and some ability, and they love to shoot the three also. If some of those go down, it could have been a different story, to your point. And what is that? I mean, is it – I've heard you say this, and I love this, is that it takes no talent. In fact, back when I was coaching girls, I used to tell them, and in the fifth to eighth grade, I said, look, there is no talent required for effort. I mean, go out there and give everything you got as long as you're on the floor, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I it doesn't. And I don't know. You know, it's hard. You know, it was weird because I didn't think we didn't play hard necessarily. Mm-hmm. I mean, we dove on the floor for loose balls. I thought we were first to the floor. I thought we were, you know, the effort level was fine. It was really the discipline to execute. You know, we were really poor at the point of attack. You know, we put our guys on islands, so we weren't, you know, shrunk and in our gaps, and our whole defense is really predicated on trying to be great at the point of attack and then providing great support. And if they do crack your shell, you know, the ball gets to the rim, you know, you got to have low man help and rotate behind that. I just thought all those things were either non-existent or a step slow. And so when you look at the game, you know, they get 79 points, you know, they average, you know, they get more than 1 point of possession, which is the number we really look at. You know, we don't spend a whole lot of time on, you know, what the final number is. Obviously, it matters in terms of winning and losing. But end of the day, you know, you're looking at points per possession, and they were just like New Hampshire above one. And, you know, the last two games we've given up, you know, we've been the best three-point defense, you know, in the league, or we were last year, and something I think going back to the Valley, we were, you know, last couple of years in the Valley, and we pride ourselves on doing a great job of protecting in and exploding out and really doing a good job of contesting. And, you know, last two games, 21 made threes out of 55, and so high percentages, bad point of attack. And so it's a little bit of execution, and it's just like anything. I mean, you can get away from your identity, you know, just because something is – doesn't mean it always will be. And that's the same if it's bad, right? You know, you know what I mean? Like, you have a bad shooting night, doesn't mean you're always going to shoot bad. You're a good defense unless you don't do the things that made you a good defense in the first place. And I think, you know, I didn't like our trending these last two games, and it's something we got to certainly, you know, clean up as we get into the, you know, kind of the meat and potatoes of the A-10 schedule.
Yeah, I totally get that. I think part of defensive effort is focus, is making sure that you know that you have to be in the right place at the right time, that you know that you can affect the game in a variety of different ways. I'll tell you a guy who did. I don't know if he's part of this group that you were upset with, but Brady Dunlap played a heck of a game. I mean, he looked like he was all over the place making things happen.
Really did. He's done some really good things for us. His trajectory has been really good. You know, Brady came in, he'd obviously missed most of last year. He had multiple surgeries. His second year at St. John's, got a redshirt year for it, had another surgery in the spring, right before he got to us, missed the first few weeks of June when we got here, recovering from that. And, he just hadn't played much. And, I think Brady's a guy who, has the ability to put his fingerprints on winning in a variety of ways. And, I think the biggest thing for him is to get out of the mindset that I live and die with making shots. I mean, obviously he's a tremendous shooter, but he can drive closeouts. Brady's a good finisher in transition. He's not a ball pressure guy, but he can really guard the ball. He can contain, he's 6'8". He can rebound the ball defensively. He can rebound the ball offensively. He's a terrific cutter. He's got good instincts and size. There's a lot of things that he can do. He understands team defensive concepts. A lot of things that he can do that can drive winning and will allow me to play him through, the ebbs and flows of shooting. I always think shooting is a variance in the game. It's a variance for all players. It's a variance for all teams. We happen to shoot a great New Year's Eve. Doesn't mean there's no carryover for that on the VCU. You just focus on the process of generating great shots. They go in or they don't. But, for him, he's playing in such a way, and I think the biggest stat of that game was, he was plus 30. So when he was off the floor, he was plus 30 in his 24 minutes on the floor. The 16 minutes he was on the floor, we were minus 7. So, I mean, that's the best stat you can have. And it shows his impact and the wide, kind of breadth of what he's doing. And I just think he's getting better and better, more comfortable inside of what we're doing. He's always been a low mistake guy. Now he's combining it with kind of understanding how to touch the game outside of just making shots, which obviously he's a tremendous shooter.
Yeah, and as Troy pointed out on the telecast to me, he's a much better athlete than you think. I mean, he really can get from A to B quickly, and he's got it long and can make plays. Really nice player. Speaking of athletic, I mean, as soon as he comes into the game, it felt like Kellen Thames gets a steal and a dunk, and then that windmill, are you kidding? I mean, he takes flight. That's like a video game, what he threw down there on New Year's Eve, Coach.
Yeah, how about the pick of the kid taking the pick? I mean, we got an unbelievable pick of the so that was pretty impressive. Kellen's dunk, the kid capturing the perfect time. That's amazing. We need to hire him as our photographer. But, Kellen, yeah, always. I mean, he's just a guy and it's a little bit opposite. Like, I don't think – I have to go back and look. I don't think Kellen's made a three all year. But, man, does he drive winning and does it in so many different ways. And, his ability to defensively, he's got unbelievable instincts. He's got great instincts to steal the basketball. He's turned himself into a really good offensive rebounder. Our offensive rebounding metrics are through the roof when he and Paul are in the game together, which they usually come in there and that, midway through the first half, and they do it again in the second half, and they drive that. His, touching paint, and he's, he's a remarkable athlete, but it's kind of like Brady, like he's also a really good basketball player. And I think sometimes, he's so athletic and he does so many, these highlights, and you kind of can lose what a really good basketball player he is inside of that and the things he does that helps winning. And he made some unbelievable passes in transition where he, drove the ball in, sucked the defense in, sprays it out. He has a great one to Ish and a great one to Robbie where he touches paint in transition and, plays off 2 feet and gets those guys threes. And those plays, as a coach, they resonate. They're not as loud as the dunks or the athletic things that he does. But they resonate with me. He's really learned how to play off 2 feet. And it's kind of his first year in the system. I mean, he's obviously with us last year. But as by end of November, he was pretty much shut down. I mean, we kept him going till January. But he was playing 6 minutes, 4 minutes, 8 minutes, whatever we could squeeze in. And then he was kind of done. And so this is, just see his trajectory and where he's coming from. And he's playing great basketball for us and, touches the game in as many ways as any player we have.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, it's an entertaining team, but when he is on the floor, you kind of stop what you're doing and make sure that you pay attention because something special is about to happen. It's an exciting team. It really is. I think that the crowd got their money's worth. They had an absolute blast. But I do feel like your observation of the defense is right on the money. But also, I think you have a little motivation here, knowing what's coming. VCU on Wednesday is going to be your biggest challenge to date, and a challenge I'm sure you embrace. I mean, let's see what this team can do in a hostile environment.
Yeah, no, this is you know, exactly what we need. You know, unbelievably good basketball team. I think it's the best team we've played to this point this year. You know, watching their film, they got, you know, very well coached, got incredible talent, really good on both ends of the floor. Play a very physical brand of basketball, and then you go to, you know, Siegel Center. It'll be sold out. It's as good an environment. Last year, I remember going there as we played it. I mean, certainly Dayton has more people, but VCU, they're just on top of you with the band and everything else. So, I mean, it'll be crazy in there. And I think, you know, this is the whole thing with the team is, you know, as you're going, you know, you have your opponent scouting, which we do, and then you have yourself scouting, which is like as you watch film and, you know, usually every single game, and we watch every practice. But every game, you know, you watch on film and you watch the game twice, and, you know, we all get together and we do the self-scouting piece of where we need to grow, what do we need to get better at, what are we doing well in this sustain. You know, I thought, and like I said, things are fluid. So, like, we came back from break, New Hampshire, I thought, you know, we were terrible on both ends against New Hampshire. I thought we were, you know, I thought our rim decisions were really poor offensively, thought our spacing was poor, thought our flow offense was poor. I thought we didn't cut well, didn't move well, didn't share the ball well. And we really went back to work on those things, and I thought we were awesome in those areas against St. Joe's. You know, we didn't quite translate the defensive piece over, but that's the nature of this deal. But, Wednesday will be our biggest test so far. Great team, hostile environment. The teams I've been a part of, and I've been fortunate to be in some big-time road games, you know, at LMU and Indiana State, they love it like this. I mean, the tougher, the better. You can't, that's exactly what you want to see. You want to walk into a hostile environment against a great team and kind of see if you have the mental toughness, the discipline to go out, execute in a big time game like that in a great environment. And I know our guys are chomping the bit. I am as well. And, you know, we'll see where we are. It'll be a great litmus test, and, you know, and then we'll take some great lessons from that game and then fly them forward and get ready for LaSalle, which will be another tough road game.
Yeah, this is why you come to a school like this. This is why you play at this level. To a competitor, there's nothing better than the sound of getting booed when you come out of the tunnel. I mean, that is just going to be a lot of fun. We'll have the broadcast at 6 o'clock on Wednesday. It's SLU and VCU. Coach, congrats on a great start to the season and good luck out in Richmond.
Appreciate you. Thanks, Tom. We'll see you on Wednesday night.
Yes, sir. There is Josh Schertz, the head coach of the Billikens. His visit sponsored by Royal Banks of Missouri. When we come back, the St. Louis Blues are off to a good start in 2026. They've won back-to-back home games, shut out the Canadiens last night. We'll visit with Barrett Jackman. Can't wait to visit with one of the toughest St. Louis Blues ever. He'll be with us on KMOX next. Great to be with you, and great to be with one of my all-time favorite St. Louis Blues. Man, do I love number 5, Barrett Jackman. What's going on, Jax? It's great to have you back on KMOX.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me.
As I remember covering the team, and I remember you coming in your rookie year and us admiring your skill level, but I think what was most admired about you through your career was your toughness and durability. I don't even want to know how many injuries you played through to get to where you were.
Yeah, no, quite a few, but it's it was the price you had to pay. If I wanted to stay in the NHL, I had to play hard nosed and play through injuries. And I always kind of measured myself. If I wasn't playing through an injury, I probably wasn't playing hard enough.
That's right. Ozzie Smith said that to me one time. He said, "If you tell the coach you're 100%, you're not 100%. Nobody's 100%. If you're playing, basically, what he said was, if you tell them you're 100%, you're not playing hard enough. It's always trying to battle through things. You're going to be in the 2026 induction class with Al Arbor and Alex Steen, the fourth group to enter the organization's Hall of Fame. Congratulations. I mean, I could not be happier for you to enter the Blues Hall of Fame.
Yeah, thank you. It came kind of a bit of a shock. I thought maybe I had a chance years down the road, after some great players went in. But when Prongs and I were on the stage at AB at the beginning of the year, and told me I was blown away and absolutely in shock.
And the Blues will have that ceremony on January 12th at the MAC downtown, and then you will be honored along with Steiner and Al Arbor at Enterprise Center the next night against the Carolina Hurricanes. By the way, the Hall of Fame committee announced that Kelly Chase will be honored with the annual True Blue Award at the ceremony. Just cannot wait for that as well. What an incredible human being Chaser is.
Yeah, just that grew up with, the tradition of Al Arbor, Steiner, winning the cup and being really the glue of that group and being a great teammate to me over the years. And then, Chaser, what he's done for the entire community. He's never said no to a charity. He's raised so much money in the community he really exemplifies what, the true blue, bleeding blue and being, putting on that blue note. He's the guy that, is deserving of a true blue award. And it's great to have that recognition.
And you continue on this great tradition of the Blues alumni. The best alumni group, I think, in any sport is the Blues alumni. They stay in St. Louis. They contribute to St. Louis. And yesterday, St. Louis police officers faced off against the firefighters, the police versus fire game, first responders night presented by ServPro. You suited up alongside the police officers, and that had to have been a tremendous time, as well as what it meant for the backstoppers.
Yeah, the first responders in St. Louis, whether it's, riots or, tornadoes or just trying to keep the streets safe and everybody in St. Louis, they mean so much to the community. And the alumni group is really big in helping those groups out. And we're grateful for them. And, like you said, we have a tremendous amount of alumni that are in St. Louis still and love to stay here because of the people and the way St. Louis has embraced us while we played and after the fact as well.
You're just such a big part of the community. The St. Louis Blues are, but it's always better when they're winning, and they are winning here. Now they start off January with a couple of wins. What do you observe here? Is it all about goaltending with them moving forward, or are all the pieces starting to come together a little bit for this team after that rough loss against the Avs?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of everything. Binner was amazing last night, and Hof, the last month has been one of the best goalies in the league. So, that obviously helps. But I think a lot of these young guys coming in and through a lot of injuries to key players, the young guys are getting experience. And the more experience you get, the better you get. So I think a lot of that stuff is kind of, a little bit hand-in-hand with the goaltending as well.
How do you see the defenseman? I mean, being a defenseman yourself, what do you see about the future of this organization from that standpoint? I feel like that's been a question kind of hanging out there. What do they look like in the future?
I think they're going to be good. I got a couple of young guys. Mayu has had a bit of a rocky start, but he has all the tools. And, he came into the year with only playing, 5 or 9 games. So, the experience for him is big as well. But, the mix of the older guys, Fultz had an amazing year, Fowler, Parayko, are amazing, players, and Broberg is a stud. So I really do like the mix. And then the young guys they got coming up are going to be pretty good as well.
Yes, they are. I believe that as well. They got some good ones coming in. This is also just really part of what you're about too, is teaching young players. I mean, how gratifying must that be to see some of the kids you've been around go on to play at the highest level they can possibly get? I mean, hockey is going all the way back to some of your predecessors like Bob Plager. I mean, teaching people the sport has been a big part of what the Blues are all about.
Yeah, it's carrying on the tradition of, leaving the blue note in a better place than you found it. And the lessons I learned from Al and Prongs and Walt and Dougie Wade and all these guys that I had the privilege of playing with, and And you just you pass it along, and you know Bobby Plager is you know the perfect you know gentleman and you know kind of you know purveyor of the Blue Note, and he's taught us all you know some great lessons.
It's going to be a great night when you go into the Blues Hall of Fame. That's going to be on January 12th. We appreciate all that you do for us, multiple appearances on KMOX through the years. Also, the Blues visit the Blackhawks this coming Wednesday. Let's not forget a late game, too. Boy, a lot of time to prepare for an 8:30 faceoff, which is probably going to be like 8:50-something because it's on TNT. But anyway, Jax, we appreciate you. Congratulations on the Blues Hall of Fame. Thanks for all that you did for the Backstoppers. I work with them as well, and I can't thank you enough for what you did last night for the first responders.
No, it was a great night, and just being on the ice with those guys, and it's pretty special. And you know, the alumni appreciate them, appreciate what you guys do too, and on the radio support all of us. So thank you.
Well, thanks for leading the alumni and carrying on what so many have done before you. And have a great rest of your day. Be well.
Thanks you as well. Take care,
Barrett Jackman. He is going into the Blues Hall of Fame. Great to visit with number 5. We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, we are going to get into some football at the start of the 11 o'clock hour. We're going to sort through what the NFL playoff picture looks like as of right now and what it could look like by the end of the day. This is the end of the NFL regular season. We'll also hear, and we're going to shift to baseball. Cardinals fans are hanging on. They listen to this show a lot of times to hear some baseball, and are they going to hear it? Greg Amsinger, MLB Network, with us at 11:15 live this morning. Chaim Bloom, 11:30, the Cardinals president of baseball operations. Bernie Miklas at 11:45. You've only listened to half of Sports on a Sunday Morning. Back after this.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
Great to be along with you for hour number 2. Lots of baseball coming in this hour as we visit with Greg Amsinger, Chaim Bloom, and Bernie Miklas in consecutive segments, 11:15, 11:30, 11:45. We'll talk a little football with Bernie probably, but a lot of baseball as he'll comment on whatever Chaim Bloom discusses with me at 11:30. And before that, Greg Amsinger is doing an event with Ollie and Chaim on January 16th, he's going to tell us about. We'll get his perspective as well from a national perspective. But right now, after we've talked U.S. ski team, we've talked college basketball, we've talked IU football, we've discussed Mizzou and Illinois from a basketball standpoint, and we had a nice conversation with Barrett Jackman about the Blues. I think it's time to talk about the NFL. The NFL playoffs begin next weekend. This is the final weekend, the final day of NFL regular season. Normally we do some picks during this segment, Drew, but I think these games are not very good. I mean, most of these games have no meaning, so it's hard to pick. It doesn't really feel right, but I'm going to highlight a couple of games that I think are going to be of interest. The first one is New Orleans at Atlanta. And the Falcons, if they win it, are going to put the Carolina Panthers in the playoffs as the NFC South champion. But if the Saints win it, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are NFC South champions. and the Panthers are out. That's because Tampa Bay won yesterday 16-14, setting up this tiebreaker scenario. If Atlanta wins, all three teams will finish at 8-9. Atlanta can't be the champion. They've been eliminated, but they would be 8-9. And in a three-way tiebreaker, Carolina gets that based on matchups. But if New Orleans wins, that bumps Atlanta out of a tiebreaker scenario, and it would be Carolina versus Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay wins that tiebreaker. So again, if the Saints win, Tampa Bay's in. If Atlanta wins, Tampa Bay is out and Carolina is in. And this would be the Bucs trying to make five straight division championships, five straight playoff appearances. They've kind of run things down there in the NFC South. I do like the Falcons today. I don't know about four, but I'll go ahead, whatever. Falcons might. I don't even want to do picks, honestly, but I'll just say. I think it's going to be a tough one. I don't know if the Saints can do that down there in the ATL. Then the other game of note is the Sunday night game. Baltimore at Pittsburgh. Let's do pick that one. Ravens, a three-point favorite to take the AFC North at Pittsburgh. This is a great matchup. Very exciting to see what's basically a playoff game before the playoffs. Steelers win, they win the division. Ravens win, they win the division. The Ravens are a three-point favorite at Pittsburgh. Do not tell me that the Pittsburgh Steelers, one of the crown jewels of the NFL, are going to miss an opportunity at home to beat the Ravens and win the division. Give me Steelers plus three, and if I'm wrong, well, the Steelers should be, I'm not going to say should fire Mike Tomlin. I think it's a little extreme. By the way, stay away from Kurt Cignetti. Everybody, okay? But the Steelers should win that game. I mean, it's a Sunday night game at home against the Ravens for the division. What more do you want? Stop stubbing your toe, Pittsburgh, and get yourselves a victory. They lost at Cleveland 13-6 after ripping off three in a row to put themselves in this position. So those are the big ones. So here's how it looks right now, just at this very moment. If the season were to end right now, Denver, the number one seed in the AFC, would play the Pittsburgh-Baltimore winner. I've got Pittsburgh as the four right now, since I'm picking Pittsburgh. They would be the four seed taking on Houston. And the 4-5 game, the winner plays Denver. New England and Buffalo in the 2-7 game, Jacksonville and the Chargers in the 3-6 game. That's how it's set up at this very moment. In the NFC, Seattle with its 13-3 win at San Francisco last night claimed the number one seed and a bye in the NFC. If you're going to go to the Super Bowl, you're going to have to go through Seattle. They're excellent. Very good defense. At the moment, they would play the winner of Carolina and San Francisco, because again, I told you I've got the Falcons winning today. So that would put Carolina into the playoffs, the 4-5 game, Carolina and San Francisco to play Seattle. And then Chicago and Green Bay right now is set up as the 2-7 game. Oh, baby, at Soldier Field. And then Philadelphia and the Rams, the 3-6 game in Philadelphia. Good luck there. The Eagles are going to win that game. They are so tough this time of year. They just find ways, don't they? Anyway, that's how it's set up for the NFL playoffs. Looking forward to all of it. KMOX will be involved in the playoffs as well. We'll let you know as we get a little closer which games we're going to be carrying once the schedule is set. Tomorrow morning on Total Information AM, I will break down the entire schedule for you and let you know when and where and what time, which networks have it, etc. We will take a timeout when we come back. MLB Network's Greg Amsinger. Once upon a time, he worked right here at KMOX. He was behind the glass helping out Sports Open Line. Now he is the lead anchor on MLB Network, and we will visit with him next on KMOX. 11:16 on Sports on a Sunday morning. Coming up, Chaim Bloom, Bernie Miklas. That's how we'll round out the show, but right now we're joined by a former KMOXer. It's so great to have Greg Amsinger back on the radio station. Anytime we get to chat with him is a good day. What's going on? MLB Network host has got himself an event coming up later this month. How are you, Greg?
I am doing well, Tom Ackerman. Good to hear your voice. Yeah, I'll be in town on the 16th for what's going to be, I think, an exciting night, a positive and exciting way to kick off the 2026 baseball season, in my opinion. I'm calling it the Amsinger Series, New Cardinals Baseball Era. Chaim Bloom, Ali Marmol on stage with me on the campus of Littlewood University's Scheidegger Center. It's going to be a blast, man.
That looks like a great time. 7 o'clock starts, 6 o'clock for a VIP meet and greet opportunity. And I think those two gentlemen love talking ball. I did something with Ali a couple years ago where we did not broadcast it. Same type of thing where we just let people ask him questions and chat with him, and I asked him questions. And he embraces that. I, you know, you've spent some time with him. He just loves talking baseball, and he'll do it all night.
You know, it's fun hanging out with these guys at the winter meetings. And I was just in Orlando, and I was with Chaim, and I was with Ali, and, you know, everyone congregates around the bar in the lobby, and I've been known to do that from time to time. And here comes the manager of the St. Louis Cardinals with a backwards baseball cap on and a cool T-shirt and, like, a leather jacket. And I'm like, this is a new day. Like, this day and age of Whitey Herzog walking around and Tony La Russa walking around. Like, Chaim and Ali and I were all in our 40s, and I kind of want people to know how cool these dudes are. I want to get to know them as human beings on stage, hang out, and then I'm going to work the crowd, and they can ask them questions about the direction of the organization. So I would be walking up and down at the beautiful theater on campus of Littlewood University. And this event means a lot to me. It's something I kind of want to make a staple as they kick off their winter caravan, the St. Louis Cardinals. There are just two groups that mean a lot to me. And it's why I'm at MLB Network right now. I fell in love with the St. Louis Cardinals as a youngster, Whitey Ball, Ozzie Smith, Jack Clark, Willie McGee, all those guys, just like you. And Lindenwood University, which gave me this incredible atmosphere to be creative. And I was supported to do all great things. So merging those two together is going to be, it's going to make for a magical night for me. And I hope everyone that buys tickets and fills it up, it's going to be a fun night at the theater.
Check it out by going to lindenwood.edu. It's right there on the front page. You can buy tickets right off their website. Greg, what do you make of where the Cardinals are right now? I mean, I think they're in need of some transparency, some clarification, some explanation as to what their direction is. And they are providing that through those two.
Well, look, Chaim Bloom has a track record of identifying young talent. If you look at what he did with two other organizations, most recently with the Boston Red Sox, they're young players through the eye and lens of Chaim Bloom. He has a skill for doing that. Now, clearly, he is very aware of the talent that Boston Red Sox have. He's made numerous deals with the Red Sox, and there have been talks that maybe Brendan Donovan would go to Boston, but he understands what the organization needs. The Cardinals are not going to outslug anyone in 2026. So the fact that he's made moves to bring in so many young arms makes a lot of sense to me. You can win 1- and 2-run games and squeak your way into a wild card. And when people roll their eyes when I mention the Cardinals potentially being a wild card team in 2026, I just try to remind them of all the other mid-market, mid-payroll teams that have not just made it into the expanded postseason that we have today, and I think all Major League Baseball fans enjoy, but have made a deep run into the playoffs. No one saw the Arizona Diamondbacks coming from a couple years away. But what was the core of that success? It was the relationship between Tony Vitello, Mike Hazen, who I absolutely love, the GM of the Arizona Diamondbacks, and Torey Lovello, who I think is an outstanding manager. Those two together had such a great relationship back and forth that it led to success that no one saw coming. I want people at home to know that Chaim Bloom, Ali Marmol, they're on the same page. He had every right, Chaim Bloom, to make a change of manager if he wanted to, bring in his own guy, but chose not to do that because he sees the potential and the talent in Ali Marmol. So I really want people at home in St. Louis to know that these two guys are the beginnings of the recipe of success in St. Louis.
What do you think happens between now and maybe even your event? I mean, what's next for the Cardinals in terms of trades and transactions?
I think the Cardinals have to continue to explore moving the guys that they're getting phone calls on. Jojo Romero, I think, is going to get moved. There are too many teams that want a guy that's got that kind of tenacity, who's got pitchability coming out of the bullpen. I think he'll eventually get moved. I think Brendan Donovan is going to get moved. There are just too many teams that want him. Every single club that's in a win-now mode wants Brendan Donovan. Now, up until this event on the 16th, I'm not sure that happens. Obviously, fans in St. Louis probably want to see Nolan Arenado off the books, but there's a new reality. I think Heim brought that up at the winter meetings, that there is a realistic chance, Tom, that Nolan's playing third base for the St. Louis Cardinals, even though we gave him a farewell tour in his last regular season game. We thought on the same day we said goodbye to John Mozeliak at Busch Stadium. So there's a chance that he sits pat, and he can do that because the end game is 2028, to be ready to rock and be a force, not just in the NL Central, but to compete with the big dollars of the Los Angeles Dodgers, because that's where baseball is right now. Can you, in the National League, compete with the Los Angeles Dodgers? You're not going to do it with your payroll, but you have to do it with a young core. So I think moves via trade are essential. And look, I wouldn't be shocked to see a Mason Winn get a contract extension. I wouldn't be blown away to see an Alec Burleson get a contract extension or a Matthew Liberatore. At some point, and Heim knows this, you're going to have to start building a young core and then have the pieces go around that. Even if you're not, quote-unquote, in win-now mode right now, the young core has to start to get established.
You know that voice. Greg Amsinger from MLB Network is with us. You're well-connected. I mean, what are people saying on both sides about 2027? I mean, is there a legitimate fear that we could have a stoppage, or do you think they are showing some optimism anywhere that they could work something out?
Well, listen, I was in Vegas for the MLB Awards, and I had a chance to talk to Commissioner Rob Manfred, and I thanked him for already beginning the conversations with the Players Association just a couple days before he was in Vegas for that event at the owners' meetings, and he had an initial meet with them, and that is a big step forward compared to years past. And the fact that he is not just waiting to the end of this collective bargaining agreement to expire to begin those conversations is symbolic of where the league is. And I hope both sides recognize there's just too much momentum right now for Major League Baseball. We're coming off, in my opinion, the best World Series I've ever seen. That was an incredible World Series. We've got Aaron Judge in his prime. We've got Shohei Ohtani in his prime. How in the world, 50 years from now, looking back, would we not feel like we missed out? The world missed out on two incredible individual performers that are faces of a generation of Major League Baseball. So I just hope that both sides recognize, and I believe they do, Tom, I really do, that missing time is just not going to help the evolution of this great game, and the numbers are trending up, the impressions on social media, the ratings are up, everything is working in baseball's direction, and I really think that initial meeting before the MLB Awards in Vegas was incredibly important for Rob Manfred to extend that olive branch to, like, hey, let's try to make something work sooner rather than later.
It does feel like the game is in a good place in terms of popularity. Just wait till the Cardinals are good again. I mean, you know how big this fan base is. They're all out there. I mean, we see them, we interact with them, we hear from them. The ratings all over the place are very good. Radio, TV. My question to you is, you grew up a Cardinals fan, you see some empty seats, but you also know that there's a frustration within the base. You know, we watch your show, such a great show. But as Cardinals fans, you know this because you grew up one. When you don't see the Cardinals highlighted, when you don't see players being spotlighted, it is like, who are we? I mean, it's just a weird time right now to be a Cardinals fan. It's a place that we have not been, at least not in my lifetime.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, we're pretty much the same age. And every year since we can remember, there was always a star, right? There was always a star on the St. Louis Cardinals, whether it was Ozzie Smith, whether it was Mark McGwire, you can move all the way up to Albert Pujols. Like, there was always a star that you hang your hat on. And I believe Nolan Arenado is a future Hall of Famer at third base, a star, but his time in St. Louis looks like it's come to an end. Going into this new era, it reminds me, and I'm going to bring up an early 90s team that still had Ozzie Smith at the end of his career before Royce Clayton came and took that spot over. But it reminds me of Bernard Gilkey in left field and Ray Lankford in center. And here comes Brian Jordan. And here's some guy named Greg Jeffries we're going to sign to put at first base. Ended up being really smart money. But this is kind of where we're at. And what I liked about those early teams is it was a style of play. They created a style of play, and And why were the Cardinals of the 80s so special? Because Whitey Herzog did not try to outslug teams. He saw the ballpark that he had. He constructed a roster along with Dal Maxville that was a new style of play. And I'm hoping that this current regime can figure out what that style is. Because I don't think, and I agree with you, that if you win, they will come back. I don't think it's just it ends that way. This fan base is far too sophisticated in the sport of baseball. They need players. They want to go buy jerseys. There's no fan base that wears a baseball jersey to a game more than fans in St. Louis. But they're not going to do that if they don't know that Victor Scott's going to be around beyond his years of control. They don't know that Alec Burleson's going to be around beyond three more years of arbitration. They want to know that these guys are going to stick around and they're theirs, right? So, and then you're going to need to add a star. You're going to need to find that guy that's the smart money buy. The I brought up Greg Jeffries, but the Lance Berkman, the Carlos Beltran, the guys that came over and knew that this was a great place. And I've said this before, and I'm going to say it on January 16th at Lynwood during this event. Cardinal Nation was the tiebreaker. And you know this, Tom, when the big market team would offer a four-year contract for a certain money for a free agent, and the Cardinals would offer similar money, maybe less, but they were competitive. The thing that put it over the top was the culture of playing in St. Louis. The energy of that ballpark, how many of my colleagues that I work with every day at MLB Network told me, from Al Leiter to Dan Plesac, you name it, they wish they would have played for the St. Louis Cardinals. Because playing at Busch Stadium was a marquee event. It was packed every night. Fans in St. Louis need to recognize that when they fill that ballpark up, they're helping break the tie in free agency. When the Cardinals are ready to spend money, they need that ballpark filled up. They need that to be a scene because you're recruiting the players. No group recruits players better than the fan base, and I can't wait for St. Louis Cardinal baseball to have that advantage again.
Well said, buddy. I appreciate it, and I can't wait for your event. It's going to be on Friday, January 16th, Scheidegger Center, Lindenwood University, the Amsinger Series with Ollie Marmol and Chaim Bloom at 7 o'clock on the 16th. Have a great time with it, and we'll catch up with you real soon.
Tom, you're the best. Talk soon, bud.
When you think about meal kit companies, what do you see? Probably long, complicated recipes and subscriptions you can't escape. But with the new Blue Apron, we're doing meal delivery differently. No subscription needed. Faster, easier meals. And the same dedication to quality we've always had. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good to talk to you, man. Greg Amsinger, MLB Network with us. Chaim Bloom's coming up next. Right here on KMOX. Great to visit with Greg Amsinger last segment from MLB Network. Good to talk to him again. And we're joined by the man he's going to talk to on January 16th, and that is Chaim Bloom. Chaim, good morning. Great to visit with you.
Yeah, good morning. And looking forward to winter warm-up and everything that's going to be happening that weekend.
There's so much going on. You have winter warm-up. By the way, the caravan will be out rolling through some of the cities and bringing some players out to the folks, not in St. Louis, but the Baseball Writers' Dinner on Sunday. I understand you're going to be holding a VIP Q&A session there, which I think is a neat opportunity, too. I think that it sounds like you are very open to visiting with this fan base and just talking baseball. I mean, there's something about talking about this game. There's never an easy just, you know, answer to something. There's various ways you can look at the game of baseball, and I think that's one of the more appreciative things about it, don't you think?
Yeah, and that's part of the beauty of it. That's part of why we all love it so much. No matter how much you think you've seen, how much you think you know, there's always something else that you haven't seen yet. There's always something else to learn about the game. That's really so many people that I've been fortunate enough to work with in this game. That's what drives us. That's the exciting part about getting to do what we do every day.
What has the offseason been like just communicating with everybody, too? I mean, it's obviously you've been with the team for a couple of years now, but with your new position and getting everything ready to go for this coming, we're here. I mean, it's January. So what has that been like, your communications with the staff, with Holly Marmel, with the players? Everybody's starting to buzz a little bit and get back together? Plans ready for Jupiter?
Yeah, it's such an advantage, as you point out, to have been in the organization prior to this. But of course, it is a little bit different, obviously, when you're in this seat and everybody's trying to understand how you want to operate. And same thing for me with this whole crew, understand what everybody brings to the table, even more so than I've been able to learn in the past couple of years. And really what we need to do to get everything together so that when we do get going in Jupiter, we're ready to rock. It's going to be a little bit different, obviously, knowing we're going to have a new facility that we expect will be baseball functional for us, but still be putting the finishing touches on some of that facility throughout the summer. So, you know, it's really exciting to be able to just to know that we're going to have something new to get used to and a lot more functionality down there, but also a little bit of the unknown because it will be new for us. So it is very eagerly anticipated.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting down there myself. I won't be down until the last couple of weeks of March to check out the last two and a half weeks of spring training. But I know that fans are going to start heading down there in February and they want to navigate it too, not to mention the media and everybody else. So there's a lot of unknown as we all share this together. Can you describe some of the changes down there from a baseball standpoint that really stands out to you that's a big difference?
You mean in terms of the facility and what we're
for the team? Like what is different for the team that they will experience when they get down there and start working?
Well, it will be completely transformed. Obviously, our crew has done an amazing job over the years getting everything accomplished in a facility that, you know, is very nice, but obviously with where this industry has gone, where the game has gone since it was built, obviously it did not have everything that you would want if you were starting from scratch today. So we're going to have a brand new building, with new weight room, new training room in there. We're going to have a cafeteria on site where we will be able to serve everybody, major leaguers, minor leaguers, which we haven't been able to do in the past. New meeting rooms. There'll be changes to the stadium that fans will see. And of course, the Marlins are doing a renovation too on their side, and they'll have some of their own things. We'll also have a new cage. So there's a lot going on, and there'll be stuff inside the building. Clubhouse will be different. We'll have new coaches' meeting rooms, redone locker room areas, really a transformed first floor of that building. And then, you know, on the second floor up where we office, hopefully we'll have a couple nice bells and whistles up there too. But mainly the newness of the experience will be for our folks in uniform.
It makes a difference for the players, doesn't it? When they're choosing, let's say in free agency, where they want to go, they have a choice. If they're looking, of course, at money, that's a big part of it. But they want to go to a place where they feel most comfortable and where the facilities are up to their standard. Isn't that a factor?
I think it's one of the biggest things that's really changed in the game during the course of the time that I've been fortunate enough to work in it. Not that this wasn't something that people emphasized before, but more that clubs, rightly so, have seen a lot of different ways that they can compete besides just what you see between the lines. And especially in the last 10 years, what we can offer our players, how much we can help them get better, things we can bring to them, whether it's, you know, things we do in terms of development, in terms of player improvement, in terms of, you know, how we can help our pitchers, how we can help our hitters. The facility is a big part of that. And so now when guys are choosing where they want to go, they don't just want to look at, obviously, what they're going to be compensated, although that's a huge part of it. But they also wonder, okay, if I pick this spot or that spot, where am I going to be able to get better? Where am I going to be able to get my work done more effectively so that I can maximize what I can do on the field? All this stuff matters to guys, I think, increasingly so, the more and more competitive that the industry gets. So it's going to be nice to be able to take a step forward in that regard.
Chaim, with regard to the trade market and free agency for that matter, but the trade market, how are things looking? Are the phones ringing? Is it as hot as it seemed to have been back at the winter meetings?
Yeah, you know, we've talked about it a couple times, you and I, on our weekly chats, and there's kind of been a constant hum to it. Obviously, we were able earlier in the offseason to get a couple deals done. The conversation has just been ongoing, like a small break for Christmas, small break for New Year's, and you could feel it really thaw out as we got into this weekend and would expect that will continue now. through into and throughout January. We'll see, obviously, across the industry. Obviously, there's a lot of free agents that have yet to find their landing spots. There's still a lot of stuff on the rumor mill in terms of trades. We've been active in conversation throughout. So I would expect that to continue, and hopefully we're able to align on a few more things that we like.
Obviously not asking you to tell us about any conversations that are going on, but just your overview of Nolan Arenado's current situation. He is a St. Louis Cardinal, and he's played at a very high level for a long, long time. Just how do you view Arenado as it stands right now? And I know that, you know, he was somebody that had pretty much given some clearance that if and some acknowledgement, actually, in his own words, really, that if something were to happen, he would understand that it's possible he could have played his last game as a Cardinal.
Yeah, obviously this is a, you know, an interesting situation. I mean, first of all, I believe that Nolan's going to the Hall of Fame. There are not that many people you really single digit number of third baseman who have accomplished what he has on both sides of the ball. That I think his resume speaks for itself, and he will deserve that honor whenever it comes to him, as I believe it will. We all agree we're at a point both where we are and where he is, where it just makes sense to find a different fit. And so we've been working on that. Obviously he's still with us. So that hasn't happened yet, but you know, I've been asked about this a couple times, this offseason, actually, including by Greg, when I was, on MLB Network, at the winter meetings. And I don't feel any differently than I did at the beginning, that we do think it would be ideal for everybody to find that different fit, but it obviously has to be something that makes sense for everybody. And we have not found that yet, but I don't feel any differently than I did early in the offseason on, you know, both that it makes sense and also that we will find it at some point.
In terms of returns for players, and you're getting calls, I'm certain, about many of your players, do you feel good right now about your starting depth? Is that something that you will continue to pursue when it comes to pitching, with your eye, of course, as you've mentioned, on some position player help? You've mentioned on this show you'd love to see some versatility. Doesn't have to be a right-handed bat, but that would be ideal.
Yeah, I do feel at this point, with the younger pitchers that we've been able to acquire in the trades that we've made and with bringing Dustin in here, that if we were to go into the season with the starting depth that we have now, we'd feel good about it, feel good that we have good options to compete for these spots. We will have a little competition in the group, you know, a nice mix of a floor of guys that we know can get the job done and have done it, and also guys with upside to grow into it and to continue to do more. That said, you never stop looking. We haven't. We want to make sure it makes sense, whether it's a veteran fit or whether it's additional young pitching. We don't want to do it just to do it, but we've continued to look out for it. And certainly if the right fit is there, we're going to continue to add to that rotation depth, because you can always use more.
You'll do the winter warmup, as you mentioned, and the baseball writers dinner on that Sunday night, the 18th. And then people start to leave town and start to get down to Jupiter. Things start to move. I'm curious about your World Baseball Classic feelings. You've been watching this for a while, as have we. I mean, it is a heck of a TV sport. There's no doubt about that. It can have an effect on the major league club when players depart. We saw this we're not in the excuse making business, but the Cardinals did have more than anybody else go to the World Baseball Classic, and it seemed like it thinned out the spring training roster for them. I mean, how do you view that moving forward?
Well, first of all, it is an amazing event for baseball. I wasn't a Cardinal at the time of the last one. I know how much this organization and the spring training vibe was impacted by so many departures. I got to go to the Dominican-Puerto Rico game that was in Miami, and it was one of the most electric baseball atmospheres I've experienced. Like so many people, I saw that epic matchup that ended the whole thing on TV. You can't look at that and not see how great it is for the sport and how wonderful it is. It's nice that we don't have it every year, so it doesn't lose its novelty, but it's also really nice that there is a regular cadence. Players really care about it. It's a really cool thing for a lot of players from a lot of different places to get to compete with their country on the front of their chest. And that's a pretty special opportunity. You do have somewhat mixed feelings when you're in my seat, just knowing that you'd love to have your group together in camp. But at the same time, whether it's staff, whether it's players, it's such a special opportunity that you can't help but be happy for the guys who get to go do it. We do have a few staff who are going to be participating. And I'm sure also, as these rosters come out, we'll have some players that will do it as well. and we'll be cheering them on. We will be missing them when they're not in our camp, but like I said, you can't help but be excited for them, be happy for them, and just root for them when you watch them on TV.
A lot of buzz around the game when that happens, and certainly we look forward to everything happening here in the next couple of months. See, we have turned the calendar to 2026, and that means baseball is very much on the brain. Chaim Bloom, thank you for the time. We look forward to visiting with you next time on KMOX.
You bet. It's exciting to be this close, and looking forward to talking next time.
Always good to chat with the president of baseball operations, Chaim Bloom, on KMOX. We'll come back. Bernie Miklas is going to join us next. Sports on a Sunday morning from the Stiefel Sports Studio.
From the Stiefel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
I say it every time. One of my favorite times of the week, 9 minutes on the clock with Bernie Miklas. It doesn't get much better unless Indiana's beating up on Alabama. That was pretty good.
It's one of my favorite times of the week, just to be with you every Sunday on this legendary show, Sports on a Sunday Morning. How about those Hoosiers? You know, I wrote a piece last week, SCL Sports Central, where I just went nuts. I should have emailed it to you. I just went absolutely bananas because for the life of me, I could not understand why. I hate to always use these cliches, mainstream media, college football, national media, SEC media. It was almost universal. They not only thought Alabama would win, but they were kind of sneering at the idea that Indiana would win that game. And I'm like, you know me, man, to a fault, I'm a numbers fanatic, right? I went through every metric there is, and Indiana had a distinct advantage over Alabama in every single category, right? And you know, I just said, what is wrong with people? Okay, this is not Norman Dale and Hickory High, okay? I mean, what is wrong with your brains that you can't understand that Indiana is a great, great football team in every area? And other than Kirby Smart, because I would just give him that respect, Cignetti is like the second best head coach in college football. I mean, you know, and some people say at the moment he's number one, but people were treating them like they were James Madison or something.
No,
you
it's
know?
Crazy.
It's just unbelievable.
No,
I loved that blowout. I absolutely loved it.
It was a lot of fun. It was reminiscent of when they beat the ninth-ranked team in the country by 53 points. You can't go back. Illinois was ranked ninth in the country. I mean, they beat them 63-10. I don't know what else you need. That was the one where I thought people knew at that point. But, you know, if you're saying that Indiana isn't at the standard of an Alabama or Georgia or whatever, then you're basically diminishing Iowa. You're diminishing Oregon. You're diminishing Penn State, which I guess you can, but they still were playing at home. You're diminishing Ohio State. I mean, you know, what else do you need to know? So, you know, they came out and they absolutely bludgeoned Alabama. And it's funny when it comes out that, you know, you see all the backtracking. I mean, the backtracking is just in high gear right now. I mean, people saying, well, you know, I was wrong about that, or, well, I didn't consider. I mean, you had Clay Travis. I don't know why I even bring up the name on the air, but he literally tweeted, Alabama will beat Indiana in the Rose Bowl. Save this tweet. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Okay, yeah. Tough guy.
All right, big guy. Okay. Yeah, gotcha.
But you know what, Tom, you know, just to continue this on a minute, because there's like an overview point to make. I think media in general, but also fans, but let's put it on the media because we don't put it on ourselves enough, but I don't think this applies to everybody, but it applies to too many people, especially national media, who should know better. They have to understand that college football has changed. Now, they'll say, oh, well, we know it's changed. NIL, you know, transfer portal. Of course we know it's changed. No, you don't. Because they haven't adjusted their expectations because, you know, well, Indiana's lost more games than anybody, so they can't possibly be this good. Well, why are we talking about history? Why aren't we talking about 2024 and 2025? Why aren't we talking about the moment? As I wrote in that column, I said, listen, Indiana's not playing one of those legacy teams coached by Bear Bryant or Nick Saban. They're playing the 2025 version of Alabama, And people that are supposed to be experts on this, what is it about that they don't understand? Bear Bryant's not over there, okay? Nick Saban's, you know, up in the broadcast booth or whatever. I mean, what?
No, I agree.
People keep making judgments as if they're, if an Indiana who's an upstart came out of nowhere, but great, great team, they're playing a blue blood. Well, people think that, like, Indiana has to take on the weight of history, you know, to beat, like, a blue blood program instead of looking at where that blue blood program is right now.
Yeah,
and, it's just incredibly stupid, you know, if you think about it.
It's amazing. Right? Well, it's kind of like how we've, I guess, been programmed in college football to admire these brands, that they're always going to be dominant. You know, I would expect it out of a Stephen A. Smith or a Colin Cowherd or a Mike Greenberg or, you know, people who, you know, I know they're big names, but let's be honest, like, they're watching the NFL. They're not watching every college. Greeny might. He's a Northwestern guy. He understands the Big Ten. But some of these big names nationally on ESPN are watching the NFL, so they don't know. But when I hear even Kirk Herbstreit, who has turned the corner now, but people like that who are live and breathe college football, to still, because it says Indiana, think that it's not going to happen. I mean, Bernie, there was no secret in that game. That's a game that would have made Bear Bryant very proud. I mean, they just absolutely smoked Alabama at the line of scrimmage, period.
And, you know, and you think that they would have given Cignetti, well, first of all, just all the credit he deserves, immense credit. But also recognizing, if they're so hung up on brands and they're so hung up on iconic coaching names, you know, it was almost like a few days before the games, they discovered that Cignetti was an assistant under Nick Saban in Alabama. You know, it's like, well, he didn't just come, you know, he didn't come in out of a coal mine and just start coaching. I mean, this guy wasn't like some, you know, a bartender who, like, one day, you know, walked on a field and said, can I coach this team? You know, oh yeah, okay, yeah, whatever you want. He was trained by Nick Saban, for goodness sake, right?
I know. Yeah, the coaching tree is incredible. I mean, all four of them, Lanning,
yeah,
Golding,
yeah,
Cristobal, and Cignetti are all from the Saban coaching tree. It's going to make for a great playoff. Bernie, we only have a couple of minutes left, so just, I wanted to get your thoughts on the Cardinals, because I did promote that we're going to go heavy on baseball, but just with 2 minutes on the clock here, your latest feelings on where the team is in terms of its offseason.
Well, number one, they've got, you know, and I listen to the conversation as I always do, and listen to the show as I do most times, unless there's, I'm running around like I'm crazy or something and can't get to it right on time. But anyway, they've got to trade Arenado. I still think they will. And I think, you know, I think there's the Angels are a natural outlet. And I see people writing and saying, well, he may not want to go there because they don't have a chance to win. I tell you what, I mean, all due respect, they've probably got a better chance to win than the Cardinals do in 2026. But that's not even the point. The point is that, does he want to play, or does he, you know, there's no way Ollie Marmol, if Arenado's back and he's got to make all these decisions, and this is a rebuild, so it's got to be shifted towards youth. The focus has got to be on youth. There's no way that Arenado can play as much as he would like to when you're keeping Nolan Gorman around. You want to place Thomas Tsiasi. You want J.J. Weatherholt to play a lot. And if they had Donovan and Arenado both back, then you haven't changed your team in terms of a position player standpoint, like, basically hardly at all, except for Contreras. But Arenado would be a roadblock for some things they want done, so they've got to find a way. And that's on Heim. And Mr. DeWitt as well. But number two, you know, I really support Heim Bloom's handling of the Donovan situation, and he's been consistent because he has told all of us from the very beginning that he's not just going to trade Donovan to trade Donovan. It's got to be something that the Cardinals are really excited about and think is a great deal. He's not going to settle for, you know, like, low ball offers or whatever. And I think that's the right position to take. They don't have to trade Brendan Donovan, right? And people like me who have advocated it, it isn't because we don't dislike or don't respect or appreciate Donovan. It's just a matter of pragmatism. I mean, if you can get a lot in return for a guy that's got, you know, only 2 years left before he becomes a free agent, it makes sense to do it. But I like Chaim Bloom digging in and saying, no. We're not giving him away. So I support that, because if Brendan Donovan comes back, I still don't think it'll happen. But if he does, it's for a good reason. It's for a justifiable reason.
He's Bernie Miklas. You can find him on YouTube. Absolute must watch. And certainly everything that he does with STL Sports Central, with us and beyond, is hanging on every word. That's for sure. We appreciate you, buddy. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
See you, bud.
Bernie Miklas, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling. We'll see you next time on Sports on a Sunday Morning.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.